and welcome to Signs of Life Radio, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation. I'm Bob. I'm joined by Fran. Linda is here. And by the way, if you'd like to instant message us, you can if you have AIM, and you can instant message us on Signs of Life Radio or on the chat room at Contact Talk Radio. Our number here is 1-877-230-3062. You may wish to jot that number down. We have a very interesting guest coming on. Wait till you hear about her background. There's just about nothing that she doesn't do. And welcome back to Signs of Life Radio, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation. You know, we've had over the past year, we've been blessed with a lot of interesting and well-credentialed guests. And our next guest coming up tonight, will be with you in a second, is Dr. Pamela Ray Heath. And I don't know that any of our guests have really had such a diverse background. I mean, Dr. Heath, not only is she a practicing medical doctor, but she also has a Ph.D. in psychology, specializing in parapsychology. And in addition to that, she's also an artist. And in addition to that, she's a paranormal investigator. And perhaps her most important credential is she's very psychic. As I mentioned, she's an author. Her latest book, which she co-wrote with Dr. John Klima, who has been a guest of this program, is Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife, Channeled Conversations with the Dead. And she's also had a prior book that was very successful about psychokinesis called The PK Zone. So I'd like to welcome Dr. Pamela Heath.
Oh, thanks for having me back again.
I was looking forward to your return visit. The last time you were on, we had so much positive response. And what about that? You know, you mentioned all these degrees and so forth. Which discipline are you the most comfortable with? Or I should say, which do you enjoy the most?
I enjoy them all.
That's why I do them all.
I kind of like the variety, but I suspect there is a part of me that really does enjoy the intuitive side of things. And I spend a lot of time, I would say, informally talking to people who are psychic and are trying to understand their gift and how to get better at it, how to control it or understand it. And that gives me a lot of satisfaction. I'm really not so much into proof-oriented research because I kind of feel like we've been there, done that, and those that will believe already, you know, have plenty of data to, you know, to look at.
Right.
I'm more interested in helping people who know this stuff exists and are struggling with how do they integrate it into their lives in a healthy way. And I get emails from all over the world, thanks to the PK Zone. From people who are having poltergeist experiences and they don't understand what's going on or how do I get this under control? It's driving me crazy. Mm. And that I find very satisfying to be able to help those people feel normal.
Right. Now, when we talk about suicide, which is the topic of your latest book, I think it's a fair statement to say that the book addresses the big question of what happens when we die. Not only to suicides, but to everybody in the afterlife. Is that true?
Absolutely. Because everybody basically goes through the same experiences and even in pretty much the same order in terms of, you know, being met by spirit guides and going through the transition and the life review and self-judgment and spiritual work. Everybody does these things. Mm. It's just suicides and those who die with sudden, traumatic, unexpected death tend to have more trouble with certain of these phases.
Yeah. Well, would you say that when we talk about suicide, the majority of suicides are due to some form of illness, whether it be depression or a physical illness?
A lot of the ones we looked at, there were, I would say, complicating factors of drugs and alcohol and mental illness. And sometimes with those two combined, It wasn't always a simple this or a simple that.
Yeah.
But I certainly thought that, you know, drugs and alcohol contribute to a large number.
Right. I always thought that, there's such a question that people have of the remaining loved ones, you know, of guilt. And the I think that the people that do wind up taking their own lives, what they're guilty of is just making a desperate decision. I often think of suicide victims as, you know, the same way that I would think of somebody with any other illness. Perhaps it's more tough on the survivors of suicides because of the religious doctrines and dogma that's been ingrained in us for so many years.
Well, there's a lot of factors in terms of what goes on for those survivors, and I think guilt and anger and grief, there's just so many strong, powerful emotions brought up in this. And, you know, we do have a whole chapter which the spirits talk about their attitude towards suicide, and I think one of the things that sort of comes through in that is they see it as selfish. They really do. They see it as being, you know, not considering the needs and feelings of others. And it's understandable because these people are often in so much pain. They just can't see outside of that pain. They're just enveloped by it. But we have a whole chapter also devoted with messages to those left behind. And one of the messages that comes through very strongly is that people need to let go of any guilt they have. That suicides, once they've crossed over, they do at some point, you know, accept full responsibility for what they did. It's nobody's fault. Yeah, and they often come back to ask to be forgiven. So, you know, it helps if you can let go of your anger. These are not easy things to do for those left behind. And since I wrote the book, it was sort of interesting that I knew somebody distantly. I didn't know them in person who committed suicide. And I found even I was upset and angry and felt guilty, like, you know, maybe if I'd gotten this, you know, book to them, if they understood what they were getting into, they would have made a better choice. And I didn't even know them. And how much more powerful are those feelings going to be for somebody who actually knew the victim, interacted with them on a regular basis? It's devastating. It's devastating to people.
Now, the book, Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife, which is available, if people log on to the Foundation website, there's a link to Amazon where they can purchase that book. Well, the book is filled with reports from the living and reports from the dead, and the dead in the form of channeled messages and living, you know, citing some of the research. How did you go about, you know, collecting the reports from the various sources?
Well, I started by doing a literature review where I went through about 400 or 500 books, read them entirely, page from front to end. And every time I ran across something where it talked about suicide in the afterlife, whether it be a spirit that claimed to have committed suicide, was talking about their own experiences, or a spirit guide who was discussing what these spirits go through, I pulled those quotes. And then I went back and organized all the material. And we started looking to see how it sort of fell out, what patterns were created by the information that had come through. And I should mention, we wanted to try and get as accurate a representation as possible. So we pulled from Swedenborg, you know, 1700s material on up to modern day channels, like John Edward and James von Prague. And we tried to get as many different cultures and as many different countries, as many different eras as we could represented, because there's always bias in this material, and we felt if we could get the broadest range of material and then see where everybody said the same thing, we could sort of put a little more weight on that and think, well, maybe that really is what's true, because somebody in Holland says the same as somebody in Japan, says the same as somebody in the U.S. And then we went back in terms of the suicide bomber, which is the suicide mass murder, which is our third type of suicide we look at. And we said, gee, we don't have much material here. And so we actually talked to some channels, including Lauren Thibodeau, who I know is well known to Forever Family Foundation, an excellent medium, and asked them if they would channel suicide bombers or their spirit guides. And we actually did question and answer interviews with these spirits with mediums in trance. And we added that to the other material.
Okay. As I mentioned, we have quite a lineup of tough callers. Would you mind taking a call?
Oh, I'm happy to.
Okay. On the line, we have Norma. Norma, are you there?
Yes, sir.
You're on with Dr. Heath. Do you have a question?
You. Yes, sir. Dr. Heath, I was just wondering, my son shot himself, and I would like to know your thoughts on how you feel about suicide and what happens. You're the expert. I'm not, that's for sure.
I feel they're all forgiven. I think all of them move on. They're loved, and they continue to love those left behind. And I think that the best things we can do for them is pray for them and let go of anger and grief and guilt and even sadness and that longing that they're still alive and simply wishing them the best. And they can come back in dreams and visit. And they often will. But all of these spirits, all of them are forgiven. All of them move on in time. And it's something that, you know, if I can reassure you of one thing, let it be that. It's not like they burn in hell. I think the hardest thing for these people is to forgive themselves for what they did and for the hurt that they caused those around them. And so if we can forgive them, it makes it easier for them to forgive themselves.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's overwhelmingly, that's the biggest question that comes up. Matter of fact, while we were talking, we were getting instant messages to us saying, uh-huh. Can you please ask Dr. Heath about the idea of hell or damnation? And you just addressed that. I mean, people, especially people that are religious, we're always taught that somehow you were, going to be condemned to this place that you could never recover from. And the evidence that you've developed and the messages seems to contradict that, as you just mentioned before.
Yeah, I think the hardest thing is initially, if you're talking about the problems they get into, suicides get into, in terms of their transitions and their adjustment, one of the biggest ones is that some of them have real trouble understanding that they succeeded. And you kind of saw this in What Dreams May Come, and you've
yeah.
seen it in some other movies, where people keep trying to commit suicide over and over. Even I had this in the, a bit in the movie Constantine, where people keep trying to commit suicide over and over. They don't always realize they succeeded, especially if they were skeptical of an afterlife, and they still feel alive, and they're still aware of themselves, and they have a body of sorts. An astral body, and so they think they didn't succeed, so they try again. So that's one problem, and the other problem is they don't have physical eyes anymore. They don't have a physical body, so it can be your reality is created by your perceptions and your expectations. Now, we do this even when we're living. If you expect people to not like you, that's what you're going to see everywhere you go. If you expect everything to go well and people to like you, that's what you see everywhere you go. I mean, we have this happen even in everyday life. But it's magnified as a problem in the afterlife, because without real eyes or a real body, there's no way somebody can sort of shake you and say, hey, we're here. You're not understanding. And so these people can have real trouble seeing their spirit guides because they don't think they're dead. Therefore, they're not going to see anyone who is dead.
Mm.
And this is where living mediums can sometimes be helpful, and I've certainly done this work, and I know many others have too, where you go and you say, they can see you because you're flesh and blood, and they can see the living because they think they're still alive, and you say, okay, I have to explain something. you have passed on, and you need to look for the spirit guides, who are around you, who are calling your name, who are trying to get your attention, who are there to help you.
Mm. Many feel that if you believe in an afterlife, it only makes sense if you somehow think that your existence on the other side is tied into the life that you lived here in the physical. So I guess that's because we all want to believe in a justice system, where the bad are punished and the good are rewarded. Has your research seemed to indicate that karma is real and that it comes into play? The way you live your life affect your progression on the other side?
Yeah, it does seem to. We looked at some reincarnation research, and I guess one of the things that's sort of interesting is that there's a tendency to commit suicide again. in other lives, if you've done it before. And a number of spirits, especially with more modern channels who are open to the idea of reincarnation, did talk for a bit about how their last life was going to influence future lives. Both good and bad. I mean, in terms of, in some cases they were saying, you know, you aren't going to miss any lessons, so therefore I'm going to have to deal with everything I had in the last lifetime, you know, before I opted out with suicide.
Right.
Only made worse, because I'm going to have to master this lesson. In other cases, like the suicide bombers, there was at least one where he had had a meeting with one of his victims, and he had, in penance, offered and was planning to reincarnate as her brother in a future life and help her raise her children. And that was going to be his way of paying back this debt to her, which she had agreed to. They, you know, both parties have to agree to these things.
We would you mind taking another call?
Absolutely.
Okay, we have Sherry on the line.
Uh-huh.
Sherry?
Yes, hi.
All right, you're on with Dr. Heath.
Hi. I have a question about, say, people that abuse drugs and alcohol. And, you know, a lot of times people say it's really they're, you know, trying to self-medicate for a mental health problem. So, you know, a lot of times you might say about a person, you know, they have a death wish. So it isn't like it's suicide as this event, like they did a particular thing, like they jumped off of something or, you know, did some certain act. It's more like they've just been going along progressively destroying themselves. Where would you say that something like that would fit into what you've been talking about?
Well, I would say in general, the spirit attitude towards that is that it is a form of suicide, whether it's fast suicide or slow suicide. It's still abusing the body.
Right.
However, you have to understand that their attitude is not judgmental about this. They're not saying, oh, you're a bad person, you know, you're going to burn. That is not what goes on. It's like, yeah, you didn't make the best of this. You know, you might want to make more enlightened choices next lifetime. Let us help you look at what you did and what your choices were and what might have been more enlightened choices to make. They don't even like to use words like right and wrong. I'll talk about more enlightened. The other part of that, the other piece of that, though, is as these people do their life reviews and self-judgment, start looking at the choices they had made and how that impacted other people around them and their own lives, this can be upsetting to them, okay? It's not always fun to look at this and realize, you know, you really messed up and you're going to have to face this another lifetime. So, again, it gets back to that whole self-judgment. You know, you're going to be the one judging yourself. Other people don't sit in judgment on you. If anything, I think the spirit guides try and give you a sense of balance through life review so that you're not too hard on yourself. Because, you know, I think we all tend to be harder on ourselves than other people would be on us.
Mm. So what you were saying before about a person not being aware that they've passed, how would something like that, in this situation, would you say that would be easier for someone to tell?
Probably not. You know, where it does seem to be easier is when it's pure mental illness, because when the body, if it's a chemical imbalance, it's causing the mental illness, which is often the case, then once the body drops away, the mind appears to clear. But when you're talking about drugs and alcohol, it seems to be a different situation, because you have not only the physiological dependence, but you also have a psychological dependence. And a lot of these people still crave their drugs, and in some cases may actually try to hang out with people who are using drugs or alcohol in order to vicariously get high, and can actually sometimes encourage people who are using drugs or alcohol to overuse or to use it more, because they keep wanting to get that high again. So you have that whole psychological dependence on top of the problems of what might have happened with just the body.
So are you saying that they're addicted in the afterlife?
Yeah, some of them are.
And how do they eventually resolve it, or is it sometimes...
Well, it's the same as everyone else. You have spirit guides that are trying to help you. In some cases, you may have mediums who try to help people let go. I've done my fair share of therapy in the afterlife, which is always an interesting experience. I do think in some ways it's almost easier to do counseling and therapy with spirits than it is with the living. Sometimes they can see things a little faster than the living can. But it can be a problem. I mean, I remember when I first moved out to California and I just walked through on Telegraph Avenue through Berkeley. It just drove me nuts. I hated that street because there were so many spirits of drug addicts just hanging around, you know, hanging around waiting for somebody to light up so they could get high off them.
Mm. Hey, Sherry, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Okay. Dr. Heath, what would you say? Is there a common theme of what people who take their own lives, a theme of what they have to say to those that they left behind?
Yes. The thing they want those left behind to know is that they are still loved, that death does not create, does not cut the tie between you and those you love. They still love you. They ask to be forgiven. They often feel very bad about the literal hell they put those left behind through. And they ask that those left behind let go of any grief or guilt or anger they have about this, that those left behind are not responsible, that they were themselves responsible for this decision, and in many cases are sorry they made it.
Hmm. You know, you mentioned earlier that about prayer, and, you know, I've always heard reports that, especially from mediums who tell us that prayer from those of us in the physical can help those, you know, entities on the other side. I know, I mean, it makes sense. There's a lot of evidence of the power of a group prayer and intention, you know, here in the physical. So do you agree that we can help those on the other side by, I don't know if you want to call it prayer, but by, you know, thinking of them and sending thoughts their way?
Absolutely. And that is another big message that comes through from them, is they do ask for prayer. And it doesn't matter what your religious faith is, or even if you're agnostic, just sending well wishes works. I mean, it doesn't have to be formal prayer, but they will actually see prayer or this well wishing as physical energy, like colored rainbows of light. And it's very beautiful to them, and it has a very powerful impact in the spirit realm. And not only can we pray for those who have committed suicide, but they will say that even if prayer is sent for the planet, healing the planet, things like that, that's visible to them, and it has an impact.
That's interesting that you say that, Dr. Heath. I know we were speaking about that on the show a couple of weeks ago, about sending healing energy and prayers to the planet.
Mm-hmm.
But when you were speaking before about working with those spirits on the other side who had been addicted to drugs or alcohol, by the same token, then couldn't the parents establish a relationship with their children who have crossed over that way and help guide them through directly the same way?
Certainly. However, it helps in some cases to have a little bit more of a dispassionate attitude. Sometimes when you care too much, it's almost like with mind over matter stuff. Sometimes when you care too much, it's a little harder to do it. And I guess I'm thinking about, since I was trained also as a psychologist, one of the things, when you're counseling addicts, they can be manipulative, and it requires sometimes for you to have sort of a sense of neutrality when you're dealing with them to be able to be effective. I don't know quite how to word that, but I think how parents can help their children best is by letting them go. One of the big messages that came through, and it's something that I think is very hard not to do when it's your child, but if you keep wishing that they were there, if you create a shrine to them, if you keep beating yourself up about how you lost them and how bad you feel, they feel all of that, and it ties them to the earth plane. It makes it hard for them to move on. it makes it hard for them to do things they need to be doing. And there are some very powerful messages in this book from spirits about what it's like if a parent can't let go.
Okay. Our next caller is Mo from Albany. Mo, are you there?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, you're on with Dr. Heath. You have a question?
Hi, Dr. Heath. Yes, I lost my own daughter about 4 months ago. She died by suicide. She had a very deep depression when she died. I've had what I believe is quite a bit of ADC, a lot of after-death communication with her. But what I guess I really want to know is, kind of a two-part question is, one, I've heard and I've understood, and I just want to check with you, is do my own emotions, if emotions of grief, sadness, and so forth, if they're up a lot for me, does that tend to block the spirit from coming through and from communicating, say, with a parent or with a loved one? And then the second one is, you know, if she was deeply depressed when she died, how can I know that her depression is lifted? I know that sounds kind of strange, but, you know, I've heard things about them carrying the same sort of problems into the afterlife.
Exactly.
And I'm wondering, how can we know that they really are okay in that way?
You know, it's hard to say because time moves so differently there than here. When they try to reach you is usually during your dreams and sleep.
Yeah.
And that's when they usually try and get messages to you. But the issue of depression is a very serious one because if there's a psychological component, it's not purely, you know, physical. So that part, you know, drops away when the body dies, the physical component of that. But if there's that psychological component, which there often is, then they can sort of get stuck there for a while. And now they'll have spirit guides around them trying to help them. A lot of times those spirit guides will encourage sleep and let them sleep for long periods to sort of recover. But you know what I would do if I was you? I would actually, if you're going to meditate or be in prayer, send her love.
Mm-hmm.
Just send her love. And I know for me, when I'm sending it as a psychic, I do it just as sort of this pink energy, and sometimes I'll put in some gold sparkles of, like, joy.
Right.
And just keep visualizing that around her, because that will get to her. She'll get that.
Okay.
And be thinking that happy thoughts. Don't be worrying about her, because they can feel your emotions a lot of times. They're still connected to you. They still love you. They can feel what you're feeling. And if you're feeling worried, they're going to feel that. If you just visualize her happy, you know, I think that'll get through.
Yeah,
I really do.
Thanks, Mo.
Thank you.
I hope that helps.
Okay.
Thank you very much. You have to go. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. We had somebody instant messaged us and wanted to know if you could clarify. When we were talking about how one can be addicted in the afterlife, you know, the question was, you know, what are they addicted to? Is it just a behavior pattern? And I guess the answer, and you could correct me, would be that I've heard it said that, you know, what we are here, we are there. So just as we can grow here, we can grow there. So I guess it takes a while, maybe help from guides and so forth, before you can start that progression. So, you know, is it just a continued behavior pattern?
It's a behavior pattern. It's also a psychological addiction. You have psychological cravings. I mean, I'll give you an example. This is hysterical. Years ago, I was addicted to orange juice. And
orange
I couldn't
juice?
Wake up if I didn't drink my glass of orange juice. I just couldn't wake up.
Yeah.
And it was entirely psychological. It had nothing to do with the body. And it took me years to break that. You know?
Yeah.
So you can't downplay the power of a psychological addiction, especially something that was in some ways almost like conditioned for many years with physiological responses too, you know, with the body. It can be hard to extinguish this. I mean, it's not to say it's impossible. There's always help for these people. There's always help there. But it can be difficult. It can be slow.
Mm.
It does happen. I mean, people will eventually get through to them, move them on. Nobody is stuck forever.
Now, you know, I know we touched on this the last time you were on, but, you know, I often thought that people that were intuitive would make the best medical doctors, and you happen to be both. And I realize that most doctors will not admit to integrating, you know, the two, psychic abilities and medical science in their practice, but I'm sure there must have been times when you've been alerted to possible medical problems by some intuitive communication.
That was actually, when I first became psychic, that's how I figured out what was going on. As I started knowing things about people's health before I even spoke to them.
So do you find yourself, you know, spending more time with a patient before recommending a treatment? Does that help?
Well, I'm an anesthesiologist.
Right.
So it's a little bit of a different thing. I have run into cases where, a few cases, where I was concerned that they were going to have a bad outcome from surgery, and I actually went and talked to the surgeon about my concerns, and I would say in every case they blew me off, and in all three cases the patients died within 24 hours.
Oh, really?
And I did not do the anesthetic, so thank God I was not involved in that directly, but I do listen to that. I think a lot of doctors have a certain amount of intuition, just like, you know, cops and firefighters and soldiers all do, too. It's just a matter of what terms you use. And the term that doctors like to use is gut instinct. And they'll all listen to some extent to their gut instinct, if their gut says something. And I certainly do, too. Sometimes I will get a patient, and I just know they're going to be trouble.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hyper alert. And sure enough, you know, they'll do something, you know. But because you're more alert, you can be ready for it.
Right. And despite your colleagues witnessing that, they still just throw it up to, can't be anything, right?
Well, I didn't refer to it as psychic. I just said I had a really bad gut feeling, and I couldn't pinpoint what was the cause of it.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't pinpoint a logical, because they were like, okay, tell me what, you know, what specific logical reason you have for this, and I couldn't. I mean, but I didn't laugh either when, what was it, Michael Chertoff was saying he had just had a bad gut feeling about, you know, terrorism at a certain point, and everybody was laughing at him, and I was like, I wouldn't laugh at that.
No.
You know, you listen to gut feelings.
Yeah, you learn to respect your gut feelings, right? Do you think that when people get into meditative states and dream states, I mean, is that very often, you know, they'll report communication, you know, whereas in their normal waking state, it's more difficult. Is that because the brain, the filter, is not actively working?
There's a couple things in that. There are certain states of consciousness, completely normal, ordinary states of consciousness, no drugs involved, where people are simply more psychic. And those states are pretty much on the edges of sleep, either as you're falling off to sleep or as you're waking up from sleep, or it can be in your dreams, or it can also be in meditation or very deep levels of prayer. And these are all more psychic states. And so people, I think in part because also you're quieting your mind, you're quieting the constant chatter, inner chatter, it lets you be open to messages from outside of yourself.
I think we have time for one more caller. We have Barbara from Washington. Barbara, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome. Do you have a question for Dr. Heath?
I do, Dr. Heath. I have your book, and I actually bought several copies of it, and I appreciate so much your research and what you've done for survivors.
Thank you.
Suicide, and thank you. I actually gave a copy of it to one of my favorite mediums, who I respect and admire so much, what she's done for me. I lost my daughter 3 years ago to suicide, and she had struggled for many years with depression and an eating disorder, and had worked so hard at trying to fight it and overcome it, and had been in a facility for 6 months, and she's come through so many times. And my question for you, she's my only child and was 25 at the time. My battle myself is the feelings I have for her are not anger or rage or hostility or any of those things. It's my own my own grief or my own sorrow for what she experienced of shame, that I've read so many of her papers and books that she wrote, and her own, she was a film major, and then she was working on something else that she wanted to accomplish while she was alive, and I believe that she had such incredible shame that she experienced, and I knew in my gut feeling that she fought these feelings that she had for someone that I detest so much myself for what he did to her. And I know in my heart that she didn't want to detest her own biological father, and yet my own feeling was that's what really drove her to the eating disorder and those feelings of self-loathing. And so in the end, now that I feel like it was all about shame and displeasure about herself, that she couldn't get over that, she couldn't get beyond that, although she worked very hard. I don't dream and I don't sleep because I have seizures and I take medication, so that keeps me from, you know, having a lot of communication with her. I have a difficult time experiencing the joy and beauty of what she really was,
mm-hmm.
her, you know, pure in her basic self was. And so I ask you, I don't know how to just get rid of all that myself, although I know that's what she herself would of course have liked and would have wanted. I have no answers for myself, and I feel like someday when I am, you know, able to meet her and have that experience and that, you know, just joy, pure, to be able to experience her without that other stuff, then I can enjoy that person. But until then, I have a hard time knowing how to be able to do that.
Okay. A couple things. I know we don't have a lot of time.
Okay.
First of all, some of that stuff is honest feelings that need to be expressed.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not seeing a therapist,
I am.
Professional therapist, mm-hmm. great. Because some of that stuff, it needs to get out. It needs to be spoken about. And there are different things you can do in terms of writing letters, which mm-hmm. you then sort of burn in a safe
mm-hmm.
way. You know, you
mm-hmm.
don't want to set the house on fire.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and sort of let the smoke pass the message and let it go. The other feeling I'm getting from you is the sense that you felt like in some way her suicide was a failure. And I guess one of the things I don't talk about too much is that we have to be very careful about judging as the living what happened or what it meant.
Mm.
I remember there was, when I was writing this, there was a kid who was 15. Who was thinking of suicide, and that's one of the motivations I had for writing this book, was I wanted to get this information out there so he wouldn't do it. And he told his mom that this was the longest he'd made it, that's the last time he'd committed suicide at 9. And you have to understand that if she had committed suicide at an earlier age in other lifetimes,
mm-hmm.
that might be an enormous success for her to have held out that long. So it's really important to be careful about judging whether a life was a failure. I'm kind of getting that feeling from you that part of your anger is because you feel like she failed in some way. I'm not sure she did. I have this odd feeling, you know, that she actually, that lifetime was a success for her.
Thank you, Barbara.
Okay.
That's always a big question of letting go, and it's not an easy answer.
No, and it helps to have professional help. I mean, it really does. You can't just cut these feelings off. They're genuine feelings, and they need to be expressed. They need to be felt, or they lead to health problems, frankly.
Right.
So you've got to be true to yourself, but at the same time, you have to move through that grieving process. You can't get stuck there.
Right. Well, once again, it's been a wonderful hour with you. For those who would like more information, once again, the book is called Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife. You can purchase that through most of the sources, or I recommend you go on foreverfamilyfoundation.org, and there's a link to Amazon. You could purchase it there. Dr. Heath maintains an elaborate website. That's another thing. She's an expert in computers. I forgot to mention that one.
And cooking.
The website is PamelaHeath.com, which is her name, PamelaHeath.com. There's a wealth of information about there, about her books, about the artwork, about the media, and a lot of interesting questions and answers, and I know people have a lot of questions. So thank you so much for being with us. I hope to continue this again at a future point.
We'll just keep on going.
Yeah.
Anytime, I'm happy. And, you know, God bless all your listeners, and may they, may they find the answers they need.
Yeah, well, that's well put. We're all searching for answers.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Dr. Heath.
All right.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Well, you know, we're always talking about the afterlife, and we're always talking about psychic phenomena, but, you know, this is, you hear it in the voices. I mean, this is the anguish and the
grief. Well, I think it's particularly distressing for people who have left somebody through suicide because of all of the cultural stigmas that go with it and the religious dogma that just makes you question what's really going on the other side. And I think a lot of information is very helpful. I think there's a lot of information out there that we also should bring to the radio show on the same topic.
Right. And with that, I would like to thank everybody for listening. Join us next week. We enjoy bringing this hour to you every week. And we would like to leave you with our message that our loved ones are only a heartbeat away, and science is going to prove it.